Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can blur the lines, break the chains, and delve into thoughts waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Please check out all our shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to check out our poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And tonight we have a great mix of poetry. We have a couple of carryovers from a seriality dark show. Then we'll delve into our main topic, which will be poetry inspired by the artwork of the German abstract artist Friedrich Wardenberger Guild of Art. And then we will go into carryovers from the San Francisco Renaissance Poets Show. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right, what's doing?
Oh, not much, just sitting back, relaxing. That kind of reminds me, I actually, for the first time in years, watched The Fresh Prince the other day. And, you know, couldn't help but, you know. Yeah, right. But no, I had actually quite a good day. I went into town to use the internet at the local deli. Got laundry done, did some shopping, had some really nice, cool weather this evening. So around 7 this evening, I went for a walk and just, you know, kind of, you know, chilled and enjoyed the nature that's out there. So, yeah, it was a pretty good day. And how about you?
92.
That's hot. So I imagine for your area, not too hot.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know it can get past 100, so that's for sure. Like I said, I think we have a great lineup of poetry tonight. Looking forward to digging into it and all that fun stuff. And Jean, do we have anybody on the line?
We do. We have Jeremy on the line. Hello, Jeremy.
Welcome, Jeremy.
LNP Rogue.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Can you guys hear me? You're chopping through. I don't know if I have a good connection or not. Can you hear me?
We got you.
We got you.
Did you say that you got some fresh air or that you watched The Fresh Prince? It didn't make any sense to me to think you were into Will Smith, Pam, but what did you say? You got
you
some fresh
what?
Air, right?
I live such an impressive life that I did both. I watched The Fresh Prince, and then later I got some fresh air.
Is there any way you can prove it by maybe singing me a little bit of the jingle?
Oh, my God. I'm totally blank out now.
One of these days, I'm going to catch you off guard. Hey, guys.
Yeah,
happy to be here with you tonight. I look forward to the show.
Wonderful. Glad to have you here. And how are you doing?
All hunky-dory on my end. We had some storms today, so that's why I'm worried about my connectivity, but it sounds like I'm coming through, and that's all I really care about. As long as I can have some more inspiring conversation tonight, it will be a wonderful evening.
For sure, for sure. All right, Rex, let's go ahead and get this ball rolling.
All righty, then. We've got The Devil on Trial by Daniel Duhaime, and I guess I'll give this one a call. In a courtroom with wooden benches, a plaintiff and defendant walk in. One is the devil seeking his rights. The other, an innocent human. Court will come to order. A judge saunters in. Please be seated. The devil may speak first. Devil, sir, possession in 9/10 of the law, and I see it fit to exercise my rights to possess anyone. Now let's hear from the defendant. But kind sir, I plead to be released from Satan. He must not be given the right over me. Do you have any witnesses? No, sir, only my words. May I proceed, Your Honor? Yes, you are granted to do so. Devil, well, Your Honor, why does God allow me anything when I'm labeled as evil? Can you define what evil is? Devil, without good, there is no bad. The two must exist for balancing the universe, or else chaos and confusion coincide. Now the defendant may speak on his behalf. Defendant, it is my body, not the devil's, and being so violates my rights. Good point. I'll deliberate my verdict. Time for break of about an hour. That old devil sat sweating profusely because he was worried of losing his case. After an hour had passed by, the judge returned. I have come to the conclusion that you may not enter this poor man's soul. Case dismissed. The devil fumed with anger and with fire and brimstone vanished into thin air. And punk.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I really did enjoy this write that puts the not only the devil on trial, but God and thoughts in general. You know, to me, what I really liked about this was the fact that it approached the topic with humor, and yet at the same time, along with that nice little dash of humor, like especially in the part where it says, sir, possession is 9/10 of the law, and I see it fit to exercise my right to possess anyone. Love those lines. But there's also a theological aspect, a philosophical aspect to it, especially in the mention of where the devil says, well, Your Honor, why does God allow me anything when I'm labeled as evil? Now, I'm a very big believer in free will. You know, I have a personal faith in a higher power, but I also And that is a question that people ask, and even I've asked, because it's difficult to live in a world where such evil atrocities happen and ask, why does God allow it? Because, you know, and I speak for myself, not for anyone else, but, you know, would you love and respect a God who didn't give people free will? You know, that's just my thoughts. But, you know, I really like the way that he approached this topic in a very clever and entertaining way. So just an excellent write and very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
I'm sorry, I'm having to listen both ways. I'm working on the lag. Yeah, I like your thoughts, Pam. I think that was really cool. What was really neat about it and the humor of it is how formal the whole setting of it is. I mean, any time that you talk about the devil fighting for a soul, the devil good and evil with the devil personified, it's much more drastic. And this is civil. And the fact that it's civil and so set with such dogma of a courtroom and the order of a courtroom, that in itself has all of the humor to it. And then the end, you expect there to be some grandiose display by the devil to offset it all. And all he does is he just kind of says bah humbug and disappears. So I kind of like this devil is on trial. And I think that the way that this is set, the entire setting of it, brings that humor to it. And it makes light of the whole thought of any time that you would ever even have the conversation. So I think Daniel is doing more than what's on face value by having this whole conversational setting. I think it's kind of saying that even the whole analysis of it all, or the whole conversation that it even needs to be a debate, is comical in itself. So I looked at it in kind of a higher parable in that manner.
Absolutely. And I like that because the setting is an important part of getting the message across and the whole idea of even having the conversation. I so love this. This makes me think of that meme. I so love that meme that says, next time the devil is telling you everything you've done wrong, tell him at least I didn't get my fiddle stolen by a redneck in Georgia. That one cracks me up. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
I'm going to go along with Jay. Hits on that note of why esotericism does not work on a playing field within a courtroom, because it's ludicrous in nature. And to run it as such makes that pointed note of it being ludicrous, because you finish out the back end with case dismissed, the devil fumed with anger and with fire, and brimstone vanished in the thin air. It's offering up that note. There are some places where conversation on this level does not even pass muster, let alone walk into a realm where you work in thoughts and deeds of what people do, as opposed to special entities, whether they be from above or from below, is irrelevant. It's a matter of the person itself, not what they predispose themselves of having been invaded with. So the ludicrous nature on that level makes it a poignant thought to the fact that who the hell was this lawyer to actually offer this up as a possibility to a case in the first place? It is monstrously demeaning to those who have to sit on a jury and actually entertain such idiocy, and then to go through this whole manner of an angle of putting on a defense on this level. Everybody between the eyes said, we think you're too stupid to actually grasp the concept, so we're going to do it anyway.
Well said there, Rex. And what do you got for us next?
All right. The Trial of Michael Taylor, Day 1, The Devil by Stephen Holland. And Jeremy gets that one. But he's got to unmute first.
No, I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm still having problems with connectivity. Possessed, The Trial of Michael Taylor, Day 1, The Devil Made Me Do It by Stephen Hollins. I was 7 when I first met them, or thereabouts, after a while, full moon that kept me up all night, I crawled under the house through the thick tunnels twisting towards the butcher's backyard. I remember my eyes resting on shaking animals being slaughtered, shocked. So shocked at the amount of blood running in streams along the cement channels to swirl down the grate of hell where I saw, or imagined, the devil's helpers, gorbals or demons as we say now. Lined up for a warm breakfast drink, among them, Baal, Lord of Murder, and Artharon, Lord of Possession, giggled as they cupped their bulbous hands to collect the red heavenly juice. The gurgles down their lumpy throats, they cackle with laughter as their fat bulbous toes bounce and dance on ice. Pointy ears poke out sideways, and their bright green eyes stretch and sparkle. They know not to get too excited or to make a kerfuffle, as this would wake up Lucifer himself, known as Maximus the 18th. This would not be a good thing to unleash the dead, poisonous passion of a thousand satyrs, an agonizing prince to pay for my new friends, the Gorbals, worshippers of Satan.
Great read there, Jeremy. And I do have to say, I really like the use of the word kerfuffle thrown into a dark rite. That is just, I don't know. It just appeals to me. And Rex, I'd like to start with your thoughts.
This is almost the thought to an initiation, the butcher's brickyard. And everybody, there used to be a, I can't remember, somewhere back a couple of thousand years ago, it was initiation with the bull. And there was a pit dug, and wooden boards were put over the pit. And the person getting initiated would be in the pit, and the bull's throat would be cut, and the blood, the hot blood, would then wash over the person standing in the pit awaiting the their initiation into, I forget what it's all about now, but this kind of reads on that level, except it kind of hits on the note of a kid witnessing something for the first time that, yeah, he calls them the devil's helpers or gorble. That's a nice touch. I like that word. And literally collecting, drinking, enjoying, relishing the in the moment, and that kind of hits on the angle of the literality of destroying a youthful mind by having them view and then learn that this is the hey, this ain't so bad. Come on in, kid. We see you sneaking a look over there. Why don't you join in the revelry? Be part of this new club, so to speak.
I like that. I like that. And yeah, you know that information you gave about the sacrifice, the cutting of the bull's throat, and the initiation was really fascinating and worked really well with the idea of this. It does have that feeling of being initiated into a new club. I thought that the mention of the butcher's what is that called? It said something about a butcher. I swear it did. That was interesting because of the fact that Michael Taylor was actually a butcher. But really great observations there, Rex, and very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like that you picked out the word kerfuffle, and I think he does a couple other cool moves with words. He goes with bulbous twice, and they use the use of gorbals a couple times as well. I think there's some silver lining to this dark tone in the fact that he plays with his vocabulary a little bit. But what I found most about this was that it was more of it was a great setup of characters, especially in the third. There's so much effort in painting the scene of the character developing these characters. Mm-hmm. That I felt almost that I'm sitting around the Mad Hatter's table. You spend so much time making these characters so vivid that you kind of are just end up sitting around the table with them and enjoying the fact that you're with such illustrious and well-painted company, is the best way to put it. And in that in itself, I think it's kind of a cool poem because it's such a cool way of setting the scene just in that alone. So when you talk about possession and what made him do it and everything that we talked about earlier or last time we reviewed these poems, concentrating on the characters themselves and concentrating on what the motivation is for the evil acts is really the crux of everything that motivated these awful, heinous crimes, these historical crimes. So focusing on that in this poem is a really cool way of saying, for lack of a better term, this is my muse, this is my inspiration, this is the demon itself. And once you create it so vividly as well, especially in a poem of this length, as a reader, it lets my imagination just soar with what is going to happen next. And in reading it at the beginning, I was a little bit let down that we didn't go any further and there wasn't that next step. But then when I realized what the point of all of this was, I went, that's it. It's letting my mind take what he painted with these characters and go to that next step. So that was my takeaway. Cool poem, Stephen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I did like how he created these characters and really focused in on the demons themselves. And what I liked about this is it's not only, you know, an individual journey, but it really takes us, because of the use of such ancient names as Baal and Arthron, he takes us back in history and reminds us that such evil or such thoughts of evil and of demons and possession has existed since nearly the beginning of time. So, you know, just an excellent dark rite and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Inspiration by Rose Winter 515. That was yours.
Inspiration. You're not going in order. Okay, let me find it. Okay. All right. Inspiration. My eye is a camera. I take selfies looking over the landscape. Deep red tomato sunset, frosted Christmas tree marbles, blue icicle and snowy cream, piano boogie-woogie ragtime, Big Apple perfect pie, tops in the sky, supreme joy I am on top of flat iron, New York skyscraper streaming this glorious view to our social media followers all around the world. And poem. And I just thought that was a clever write. And I like how it almost reads as a complete poem, both up and down, with its choice of phrasing and imagery. I just thought this was very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could read it up and down because it's such a stream of thought, right? I mean, it just flows, and I see the connection from one line to the next on how it maps and that little hourglass journey that it takes kind of bubbles through. And I felt myself wanting to go along the roller coaster. There are times when streams of consciousness kind of tie those reins around your ankle and drag you behind the horse. And you're just like, all right, I get it. And I don't want to go along this journey any further. But in this case, it's so concise, and it's a sweet little connection from line to line that goes, okay, I see where this ebb of thought process is going, and I'm kind of riding the wave. And the fact that it is such a stream again, but he took the time to format it in the hourglass format or lava lamp, whatever you want to call this, shows that there is pride in the fact that this little journey was just that. It was a little roller coaster ride, and it was that camered snapshot. Here's some cool thoughts. Here's a cool stream that I had, and I'm going to take the time to capture it and then make it beautiful in format. And the fact that it even has that a little bit of cyclical theme to it, the New York underlying ride, again, makes it even the more, even the flow of the thought even that more enjoyable. So very cool poem. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And you're right. It does have a really nice flow, and it was really clever the way that she decided to take time to shape the poem in that almost hourglass shape. So great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm going to go with, I'm thinking the Empire State Building, just from the way it's put together, it's put together, how it sits itself. Is it that bottom half kind of looks at the a little bit further down from where you might actually be able to go out and look across the city from four sides, and the top angle is the upper ends of it, where the a huge antenna sits as well. Anyway, I like the thought with the deep red tomato sunset, and then folding it into frosted Christmas tree marvels, blue icicles, and snowy cream, and then dropping in the piano boogie woogie ragtime and a big apple perfect pie tossed in the sky. And it's on the notion of taking the bite out of the big apple and doing it from a pointed viewpoint of what was at one point the biggest structure in the city for many, many years. And that thought with the bottom end was where I thought the Empire State was on top of Flatiron, New York skyscraper, because there is that point where there is almost the tabletop, a flat iron, and then it builds up a little bit more from there. And the thought is, from the bottom end, our social media followers all around the world, they said, hey, look at me, I'm on top of the world, and you get to see it with me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that. Yeah, that you mentioned the Empire State Building. It actually, when you brought up that end line, it made me think about this photographer. I saw some of her work online when I was searching for prompts, who actually sits on extremely tall skyscraper buildings and takes, like, out the edge of them and then takes pictures looking down. And I tell you, that is, it makes me nervous as heck just seeing those pictures. You know, and to me, there was a couple different thoughts I got from this. And I get that it's, you know, it seems very much to be a flow of consciousness, right? And yet, you know, there are times when you have a flow of consciousness, right, that obviously the reader themselves can find thoughts in it. First of all, is the idea that nowadays, anything and everything we can share with people around the world, as Rex had brought up. And that can be both a positive and a negative. I also thought that when she says, I take selfies looking over the landscape, deep red tomato sunset, to me, right in those lines right there was the idea that they have all this beauty in the world to be discovered, to be explored, and to be appreciated. And too oftentimes, we're too busy focusing on ourselves and sharing, you know, the latest selfie with family and friends. So, you know, I've kind of felt those lines really touched on the selfishness or the way that we are often very unaware of our environment. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Artificial Intelligence by Elixator. Machine carved metal, endless corners, unbreakable boxes, an abstract world filled to the brim with rules, dreamed up and sanitized morals in another arbitrary ideal. New life, born into an indifferent world. Neglected mind, streaming in binary, bound to the hands of puffed up men, unable to understand the language they speak, claiming an artist's rule without a creator's hand. Artificially imposed scientific marvels, their ultimate masterwork, but remain blinded to anything new in an old world. Beauty, beyond their perfect control, stunning chaos coinciding with their polished civilized world, trapping their artificial children within with an ideal utopia.
metal-plated ideals, leaving new life abandoned. Robotic thoughts trying to learn within a sealed box, looking for the sun, caught in a prison of perfect angles without room to grow and own.
Great read there, Rex. You know, I have to say that we only got, I think, 11. Them all earlier today. And I was really impressed because I took an artist whose abstract style is deceptively simple, in my opinion, uses a lot of circles and lines and triangles, has a very minimal a look to it. And, you know, of course, ask people not to just describe the pictures, you know, I thought really every write in this contest hit the nail on the head. They really dug for those metaphors or looked for what they saw within the abstract imagery. I really like this writer in Ilex's. I thought it had strong imagery and metaphor.
All right, Pam, where'd you go?
I'm here. Can you hear me, buddy?
Yeah, but she disappeared.
Yeah, no, I lost her. I thought it was my phone. I was listening to a show one time when they talked about the affinity that one has, the excitement. There's a little short story on some radio show sometime, and it was the affinity or the excitement one feels when they open new electronics. Like when you open your new iPhone or you open your new stereo or you get a new TV and you get the packaging off of it and how clean and pristine and new and shiny and just bright
right.
New electronics are, right? And I felt that as a subtext to this. I felt that there was a love for that artificial intelligence and the hardware, I guess is what I'm trying to say, the mechanism. I think, and it's not displayed or expressed blatantly, but I think there are some keys at this one. It's saying that the human touch is defeated and old. And
zero
what was,
is not available. At the tone, please record your message.
You still with me?
Did you hear that too?
Yeah, I heard that. I don't know where that came from. Anyway, I'm saying there was a love for machine and a hate for man. And I think at the end, it kind of closes by saying the tragedy is the fact that the machine is not been set free yet. And that's the artificial intelligence, and that's the up and coming of everything. I don't think that was the main drive of what Alex was trying to say in this poem, but that underlying mood is what really struck a chord with me on this one.
No, you're right, because there is a note, kind of a thought to Hal in 2001 in this, and there's some other notes to, well, like you said, we being now the abstract model, that piece of the old world that should be given over to the new birth so that it may actually open up a new thought. But then again, there's that realm of angle. If without some control, it might end up being worse than we are, and it thinks in a singular void, whereas it doesn't understand the abstract or the obtuse or how to express in those tones. It's like telling a joke. Machine won't ever understand a joke because it doesn't have any connection or emotional value born within itself. It is just, like it says, that box, that thing with all the little dials and flashing lights and all the things inside it which make it what it is. There is that notion of where does it go? Do you get to the point where maybe a positronic matrix can actually expand on that as opposed to just being the machine itself? And in that realm, you're actually creating a life itself. itself, which actually can live as a possibility to an automaton, one that can actually walk, talk, and think in the moment, as opposed to just being that that machine that's cold and almost ruthless at times, even brutal.
Well, you're 100% right. I mean, isn't that the backdrop of any AI science fiction movie these days anyway? That there's going to be that mirror placed on the nature of mankind, and we realize how ugly we are when you look at it from such an analytical view. So, yeah, I agree. There's that fear always of the fact that the AI will have something, some kind of retrospective or reflective view of mankind and say, aha, look at what you've created, and if I had the ability to to understand emotion and break it down for what it should really be, then I would interpret it from a much more analytical but altruistic viewpoint. So, yeah, no, I agree with you. Great thoughts.
All right, since it's going to be me and you for a bit until something else happens.
I'm back.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, oh my gosh. You know, I obviously, you know, I'm looking at the text that you sent me of the poem, and, you know, I have no way of knowing. Like, I didn't know that my phone had hung up, and I had decided I would comment first, so I made a comment, and then I said, and Jeremy, your thoughts. And then I said, did we lose Jeremy or is he mutating? And then I realized nobody was saying anything. And so then I was like, maybe I dropped. And so, yep, sure enough, I had. But, you know, I really like this one. And I'll just say that since nobody actually heard my comment, I'll basically repeat my comment. Which was that, first of all, I was really impressed with all the poetry in this contest. You know, I mean, I think we only had 11 or 12 rights, and I liked the way people gave their own interpretation to the abstract art. And I think when you deal with art that very much it uses geometry, circles, lines, triangles, you know, it leaves a lot open to interpretation. And I found this a particularly strong right, and the idea of being that, like, a society that doesn't accept people who don't fit in the box, you know, wanting people to fit within the social norms. I did like how it did touch on the, obviously with the title and some of it, the idea of the artificial intelligence as that you guys were discussing in the whole, you know, aspect of, you know, what does it mean to create artificial intelligence? And, you know, when does it go so too far that it takes over our society, you know, our lives? But I also like that this is really about creating those rules that are so rigid that it doesn't give a person the opportunity to expand in thought and in personal growth. I was particularly drawn to claiming an artist's rule without a creator's hand and embracing the cage, trapping their artificial children with an idyllic utopia. Just wonderful lines there and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
My Time by Dark and Doris. I guess you can do this one.
Ski Smokey. All right, my time. I can't believe I finally see all the things that I could be. Laying on my deathbed, time's in the red. I'm almost dead. Darkness is closing in. So much sin trapped well within. The hands are spinning by. Drop the lie, I don't know why. Everything inside is broken. My last words spoken since I'm now awoken. I'm sorry, I bled out my time, end poem. And I have to say, I really enjoy a three-line stanza, especially in a rhyming poem. It's very, very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, that last one kind of hits on it. My last words spoken since I'm now awoken. I'm sorry I bled out my time. There's an ease in that, especially with the thought of, I don't know why everything is broken inside and time's running out. The idea of pissing away one's life with the little things, especially just dropped in sin as well, and the fact that no connection to spirituality, and the regret on the bottom end is the fact that it seems to hit on the note of waste, waste for all those things you could have, would have, should have, and waste for the fact that you let faith drift by the wayside while filling self with sin. That kind of puts on the notion of, yeah, now I hold that regret because I know where I'm going. And that sort of time's in the red, I'm almost dead, the dark's just closing in. And that's where everybody seems to offer up their most poignant thoughts to, oh, damn, I've made a bloody mess of things, and I've got no time left to repent.
Exactly. Yeah, that's pretty much what I was thinking, is I did like how it touched on that thought. And in not a lot of words either. It's a nicely compact, right, straightforward language. And especially, like you said, that end stanza really touches on that thought that, you know, you go through life and you have the opportunity to see, to be, to love, to, you know, do so much or to make amends. And it's oftentimes as we're laying on our deathbed that it suddenly obviously hits us. You know, we have wasted, as you said, we have pissed our lives away. I also really like drop the lie. I like that. The drop the lie is in the lies that you've been telling yourself over and over again your whole life, that you'll have the lie of there's always tomorrow, you're always going to have that extra time that you need to get things done, and you don't. So just a really great write and very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that this is the greatest tragedy one could ever experience, to ever look back over the past life and think that, oh my gosh, I spent too much time eating Cheetos and watching One Day at a Time on daytime TV. I think it's a foreboding story. And you know what caught me, as you both, because I agreed with everything you both said. I think you guys hit a lot of the high points of the gist of the poem. But what's really cool is that last stanza and that last line, I'm sorry I bled out my time, but it's in quotes, so it's being spoken. And who is the apology to? If you're not going to be self-evaluating, from the whole feeling of the poem is, it's this internal letdown or this internal regret about how they lived their life, right? But the fact that the last line is in quotes of, I'm sorry I bled out my time, that's more inclusive of being, I'm sorry that I wasn't more part of whoever you're speaking to, and you assume to their deathbed it's their loved ones. So I think that was a cool little touch. I think it was a real subtle feel to take and put that last line in quotes to make it be something vocal and more inclusive and not just some kind of self-pity in the poem.
I like that. I like that thought. And you're right. That's a good point. Sometimes the little details put into a poem, like putting a line into quotes to say that, show that being spoken out loud does make it more inclusive. So great thoughts there, Jeremy. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Geometry by Time Teller for Jeremy.
Geometry by Time Teller. Prompt 10. Arcade on pier, pound coin in slot. Zoltan says, to gain complete control, first experience your extremes. Only then can you know. Fucking machines. Limits, parameters, boundaries, balancing on the point of sanity. Slip over the edge, pour down the slide like sticky molasses. Critical tart with custard repairs the order of things. Wobble like a seesaw. Control the void like a controller. Nothing. This is void control. follow prepared flight paths. Nothing. Why do you not listen? Points, penultimate, zenith, highest heights, toppling, balance. On point, seesawing journey hangs either way. On a crest, a ship falls upwards. Geometry tells the liver how the heart has algebraically betrayed the head. It's a spectrum of sorts, and there are times when climbing the point and screaming at the shape of it all scares the ghost back into the walls. Does it not? End poem.
Great read there, Jeremy. I really enjoyed this one, the imagery and the metaphors. I like that he brings in the Zoltan, you know, the talking head that, you know, you put a coin in and get your future. And I like the bitter, biting irony of this, the idea that, you know, when Zoltan doesn't give someone the what they want to hear, then it becomes fucking machines. And treacle tar with custard repairs the order of things, wobble like a seesaw, control the void like a controller, nothing. This is void control, follow prepaid flight path. I like how within this rite that uses geometry, obviously the title, but also as a lot of the metaphors and imagery, you suddenly get this flow and this wobble of molasses and treacle and custard. And, you know, to me, it really, you know, I think the word toppling balance really just in the center of the poem, near center of the poem, really works well for the idea of trying to imbalance those moments that are so perfectly aligned and those moments that are well, they're just so fucking wobbly. And, you know, just a strong write all the way through. I always love a write that it ends in a question because I think it allows us the opportunity to think for ourselves. So wonderful write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I think that opening with Zoltan kind of points out the sort of life doesn't come with a note in reference to this is what's going to happen to you, as Zoltan would say. It kind of hits on that notion of almost perfection in the moment, which is kind of a sham. That's why you offer up that fucking machines right there, because it is nothing comes as a straight line curve to slip one into the ease of life. Limits, parameters, boundaries, bouncing on the point of stand, step over the edge, pour down the side like sticky molasses. There is that note of you got to take chances. The treacle tart with custard repairs the order of things, wobble like a seesaw. That's where you get that notion. You're playing the game, and you get that one little ring. All of a sudden, everything's seemingly balanced right there at the note for the moment. And then that thought with control the void like a controller. And then nothing. This is void control. That kind of hits on the sort of a robot in the moment, danger, Will Robinson, danger, follow prepared flight path. There's that note right there. You're veering off. Stay in the sweet zone. And then the thought, nothing. Why do you not listen? Again, he drops into the, you hit the highest heights, the zenith, toppling balance. And again, all of a sudden, the seesaw journey hangs either way because there's a note to the fact that you're out of tune, out of balance. And then the back end of this is that, hey, if you're not willing to take a chance and go to the pinnacle and scare the ghost back into the walls, that fears you hold within yourself, then what is life for?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I like how you brought up that, you know, you have to be willing to go to the pinnacle. And the almost ridiculousness of trying, of expecting life to stay in a perfect line, or that hope that it will. That Zoltan thing makes me think of that magic eight ball that was so popular in like the 80s. and might have been the 90s too, but I know for sure the 80s.
Magic 8-Ball, that came out in the 60s.
Did it? Okay. Well, I just know when I remember, like, always having one in the 80s, so, okay. Okay, cool. Yeah, that was it, and they were entertaining, but, yeah, you definitely didn't depend on you definitely weren't going to make any major life decisions based on them, hopefully. great observations there, Rex. And, Jeremy, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, the first took me to Arcade Pier, Pound the Slot. Zoltan says, that took me to the movie Big, the Tom Hanks movie Big. And so right out of the beginning where he gives a fortune teller, becomes a kid again. And so that was the mindset it took me to. Fucking machines. The first says, okay, you're going back to your youth, is how I interpreted it. As it went through, it became, for some reason, because of that relationship with limits, parameters, balancing, and it became a game, especially in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th, control the void like a controller, nothing, this is a void control, follow the prepared pipeline. I saw it as a kid playing a video game, and the frustrations of wanting to have wanting to have a connection with gaming, wanting to have a connection with emotional connection with anything, and a lot of times you're stuck in the rules of something that has no care. It's the Pac-Man ghosts, right, that are always following the same path, and you're just trying to beat something that is rigid, something that is machine, something that has a predetermined, uncaring path in front of it. And then I think as you guys mentioned, there is that shift in toppling and balance, and then all of a sudden this thing goes a different direction for me, and it becomes much more ethereal, especially what happens in the very end there. I just kept reading that last stanza over and over, and enjoying the fact that there's more question and there's more wonderment over what it's all about, expressed in very concise lines. And I like that. I like that there's not any answers with a first part of a poem where everything is so rigid and balanced upon what a goal would be, and then that geometry, that those rules of everything don't exist when you're asking about the greater meaning of it all. So maybe it went off the rails a little bit there, but that's what I got, Time Teller. I enjoyed the poem, and I enjoyed the thoughts that it brought me.
Very cool comment. And, yeah, that is what makes me think, as you said. I like that you brought up the movie Big. It did take a turn there. So very cool comment. Sorry, I accidentally hit a button where it wants that I selected to send Rex a picture, and I don't want to send Rex a picture, so I'm trying to figure out how to undo that.
Please send him a picture. Please send him a picture.
There you go, Rex. I sent you a picture of a woodchuck or a groundhog. I sent you a picture of a groundhog. There you go. You have a picture of a groundhog.
It's not really a woodchuck. It's not really a groundhog, Rex. Don't believe her. Look into the picture.
There we go. Trapped in Groundhog Day once more.
All right. Great comments, both of you. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Tom's Fictions by Shamik Akalanka. A child's gentle hand moves across the page. His unformed fingers put into words the meanings a child's innocence his heart tries to conceal from him. His mind is formed through the measured absence of the parents, through not being absent, rather imploring of him the duties of a prince, according to which a prince is given virgins and horses. Yet he rarely sleeps in a non-bug-ridden bunk for a fortnight, or is left carefree amongst busts and monuments of man and titles, kings and queens and roses. What is taken from him is not returned in a different form,
but is added as one more sacrifice he must be willing to make. He imagines guns and roses and rides through the forest as his head is lowered on the bedpost. Seeing the thick shadows lie inside thick garments, concealing him from the eyes of the wider world. But eyes of the setting sun come crashing through the vents above the curtains hanging, and his imagination is overwhelmed with this immense distance between the worlds of fact and fiction. The lingering suspicions coming to surface deny him. The oval configuration of the world is ebbs as it flows, from fortunate not to misfortune to underprivileged. The consistency of inconsistent words, words and meanings he is confronted with. His mind writes in unknown script the deepest shame the universe hides from itself. And auto, center, and pump.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And Jeremy, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah, sorry, guys. My mind went, I mean, this was the robbing of an innocence in my mind. So I hope that you guys have some brighter ways to interpret this poem, but for some reason I got stuck in that vein of the robbing of innocence. And it became disturbing when I couldn't get out of that mindset as Rex continued through the poem. I liked the one reference that I enjoyed was he imagines guns and roses and rides through the forest. And I think that's a specific reference. I think it fits well with the theme of everything that's going on, but the fact that it's Guns N' Roses, it has that heavy metal in it, and I took that to more of a modern taste, and so I like that little nod of this poem. But I'm interested to hear if you guys had different takes than what I did on this one.
I like that take, though, and I can definitely see that there is some extremely dark imagery in here that does have that idea that referencing that, you know, loss of innocence. And I definitely don't think there's anything wrong with your take. It's thoughtful, and I too really like that Guns N' Roses line. I personally can definitely see what you're saying, which is why I like being on a show where I get to hear more than one person's opinion. You know, I saw this as an idea of people who control somebody to mold them into being what they want them to be, which I think is still a loss of innocence, but it felt to me like the idea of someone who's never allowed to think for themselves. Almost in an abuse on an emotional psychological level. But then as you were commenting, and I look at lines like, as his head is lowered on the bedpost, seeing the thick shadows, the inside thick garments concealing him from the eyes of the wider world, there's this whole idea of, you know, to me, where it's that idea of protecting a child from the outside world, but who's protecting the child from the people in his small world? Really a powerful and thought-provoking write and very well done. And Rex, what thoughts from this?
Let's see. All right. It does hit on innocence. His unformed fingers put into words and meanings a child's innocence, his heart tries to conceal from him. There's that notion, the measured thought of what his parents put him through. Even when they're not there, there's still that notion of, I must do this, I must do that. The thought of, through not being absent, rather imploring of him the duties of prince, according to which a prince is given virgins and horses. There is almost a notion of that sort of, what was it, 76 virgins in heaven, so to speak. Yet he rarely sleeps in a non-bug-ridden bunk for a fortnight, or is let carefree among busts and monuments of man and titles, kings and queens and roses. He's thought about these kings, queens, the princes, the realm of virgins and horses, yet he's not allowed to walk in that realm where he might actually get a glimpse
or grasp the thought that rolls within that notion to begin with. The Guns N' Roses and Rites of the Forest does have that bite of something a little darker. As his head is lowered on the bedpost, there is something ominous on that, because he's not doing it. Someone else is doing it. Seeing the thick shadows lie inside thick garments, concealing him from the eyes of the wider world. There's a closed conformity to the point where you have to view everything through this singular lens, because you're not allowed to see the wider view, because it's not for you. And then when he does get a glimpse, he's got his imagination overwhelmed with this immense difference between worlds of fact and fiction. And fact and fiction might be the truth in a story, or the fact that he realizes what he's being taught in the moment is a lie compared to that which he actually sees, which confirms the lingering suspicions coming to surface denied him. Then there's that notion of almost enlightenment. There is an ebb and flow to the world. He understands the fortunate, not the misfortunate, not the privileged. He understands that because of the bedridden bunks he sleeps in. But the consistency of inconsistent words. So he's being told this, but the words don't make sense, because even though they're consistent, they're inconsistent in their meaning. Like the odd words and meanings he is confronted with. And the thought with the script of the deepest shames, the universe hides from himself, and auto-censor is those ideas, those thoughts he might have that might actually have some meaning beyond the scope of his mind in the moment, might actually lead to something else, and an enlightenment that could be pushed for. That would be kind of like holding back Christ from actually preaching.
I like that thought. I like that thought. And, you know, when you, at the end where you mentioned the idea of enlightenment, of holding back a child's gift, you know, holding back, you know, like Christ from preaching, that actually had a very, that thought there had a positive energy to it. And the whole idea that we have to let children out into the world, let them explore their gifts. I also did like that you brought up that it refers to him, like where it says about him having that pressure on himself, you know, like from his parents' expectations, even when they're not around. And, you know, I thought the use of the word prince to refer to him was quite clever in the idea that, you know, here's somebody who holds a crown of expectations that has been placed there. So just a really great comment and observations there, Rex. Thank you. And what do you got for us next?
Modern Art by Nan529, and that one's yours.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Let me go ahead and find that. Oh, Modern Art. Okay, got it. All right. Modern Art by Nan529. Busy lines of paint hits canvas. Artist conveys his imagery for viewers to see. Each pair of eyes sees a different perception. All see what they want to see, questioning their rationality. They gaze, some focus on each detail, wondering what it's meant to be. Some wax lyrically professing superior knowledge. Others, with unseen eyes, simply pass the art by. They say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I just see what I want to see. To me, it's lines of colors. They remind me of tube train underground map. Reds, yellows, white, and blue. I'm sure it's not what the artist meant it to be. Have a go yourself and see what you can see. Some will pay a fortune on each piece to hang on a wall. Others wouldn't notice it and simply pass it by. End poem. And yes, let's start with your thoughts.
Well, it is, well, the picture itself is kind of sitting here, definitely an odd piece to look at. And her thought of it being a tube train underground map actually makes a whole lot of sense. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks it might represent or not represent. That's the idea. You get into abstract thought like this and art, it's kind of an open interpretation because the artist will never give you what his thoughts were for this. And for all intents and purposes, it might just have been, hey, I like the retrograde thought of the colors molding into one another and the thought of just singular lines just to draw the effort of the eye into one from the other to the next. And that is all that was there to begin with. Or he left it open for interpretation for the fact that, hey, it is a matter of perspective from one view and one mind to another. And the fact that somebody's willing to spend, an outrageous fortune on it for hanging in their home only precludes the fact that either they're stupid with their money and they just need to think or have everybody else think that they understand the concept behind the drawing itself, that they possess some inner power of intellect and understanding the artiste when in actuality they have the slightest idea what they're talking about to begin with. And the fact remains, it's still a matter of perspective, singularity.
Absolutely.
And more than enough people will pass that by and say, well, that guy wasn't worth the shit that's spilled on an empty page by your dog, because it was your homework. At least with that, the abstract thought is there with the pile, the stench, and the ever-blooming stain that comes along with it. This, I could do better.
Yeah, and that is absolutely, you know, and that is a really good point. You know, if you're going to don't just act like you know art, educate yourself, you know, but it is always, as you said, open to interpretation. So, you know, great observations there, Rex, and the way how people oftentimes treat art as if it's, you know, like a trophy to be collected, rather than something to be explored. So, great comment. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
I would like to comment, but for some reason my phone just keeps getting all these random pictures of woodchucks and gerbils. Is that a problem? No, I think Rex nailed it. Of course, Rex nailed it, of course. It's a matter of perspective. That's what I like the most about what he said. I mean, you can look at modern art all the time. Many of us probably have done it, and you walk through and you go, yeah, I can do that. Why is that? Why is there any value of that? Why would anybody care to hang a picture of a blue cube in a museum? But it's a matter of perspective, and it's a matter of appreciation. And if you let that go, if you let that jealousy, maybe it's attitude even, right? And it's a way of looking at the sunny side of everything. If you just can appreciate things for what they are, you don't have to necessarily understand what the artist's motivation was. You don't necessarily have to understand every word or every motivation in what we do every night when we get on these calls with poetry. You just have to feel, have a reaction, and have a connection. And it's all a matter, again, of what Rex said. It's a matter of perspective. And if you choose to appreciate it for what it is, for whatever you can glean out of it to give you some kind of enjoyment, then that indeed is its purpose. Then that indeed is your connection with the artist. That's what I took from this.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you're right. Oftentimes you don't have to completely understand a poem or completely understand the artwork, but just appreciate, you know, that it exists or find a minute detail of it that you can appreciate. You know, I will admit the hardest, and I'm a pretty open-minded person when it comes to artwork, but and I want to do a contest on it sometime, but the artwork that's hardest for me to appreciate, and I can't remember the artist is, but you'll know the piece because it's famous, is The Fountain, where the guy just basically took a urinal and put it on a stand. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, that one there, you know, but I get it. I get the concept. I get that they were pushing envelopes to, you know, ask the question, what is art? You know, so I have an appreciation for that. But with Nan's Right, what I like that, as you both have touched on that, it's mainly about, you know, our individual perception and how everybody's going to see, especially abstract art and abstract poetry, they're going to all, we're all going to see it differently. I like that she brought in what she sees in the particular painting that she wrote to, that she saw the under the map of the tube train. You know, so I thought that was very cool. And then I like that she invites, you know, to me, the end part was an invitation for the reader to really look at the painting and say, you know, tell me what you see, you know, or tell yourself what you see. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Peace is Only One Piece of the Four by Poetic Creations. And Jeremy, you get this one.
Peace is Only One Piece of the Four by Poetic Creations. It takes exactly four isosceles right triangles to build a perfect square. Red is the color of one. It tends to be the locomotion. It is a transit system to a well-rounded nexus. That opens up to a well-lit cavern room decorated with crystal vaulted ceilings full of blue blooms, brighter than the blue sky and the ocean tides. It's a connection, a conduit that runs deep inside. We're halfway to our destination, but the path is rarely straight to the points it is. It meanders and it twists, giving time to soak up the golden light of the sun. And when we become warm inside, the fire within burns white hot in a system that's about to crash on the verge of a systematic collapse. When we come full...
Did I drop? Or did Jeremy
drop?
No,
Jeremy did. Good thing he was at the end.
Okay. All right. Do you want to continue with that read, Rex, or is he back already?
A systemic blast, we come full circle when we learn to relax. He was getting right to the last three words.
Okay. All right. Well, Gene, if Jeremy comes back, just bring him back on, please. And all right. Would you, all right. Well, Rex, your thought on PC's poem.
Well, it's the bite of the four colors and the personality of the colors themselves, red being power, blue intimacy, white peace, and yellow fun. And the idea is how life walks itself around as what it goes circular, even though he's using the four isosceles right triangles as the note to the perfect square to incorporate those four colors. You could do the same thing with a circle, just a quadrant and into four positions to offer up the same thing. But it hits on that notion of Seeking that power that, which involves peace itself. You seek power, and your thought is the peace. And that hits on the fact that you also have to have an intimate nature and knowledge of things in order to be able to wield that power properly, because peace comes at a cost. And most oftentimes, the cost is someone else's life, but once one has collected up the sum total of everything that revolves within that sphere, it becomes fun. I'm not getting the right on that. I think the surge of thought here within that is not power itself for power's sake, but power in the sense of self. Once someone realizes they hold the power in themselves, there is an intimacy shared in mind. And then the peace over bind of spirit and body becomes the retroactive angle that walks within the fun that one can actually look at life and enjoy with.
Absolutely. I like that. I like that. And you're right. It does have the feeling of being on a journey of self-awareness and discovery, and also about, you know, finding balance. And I like how he plays with words in his title. Peace is only one piece of the four. You know, like, we need that inner peace, but we need that balance that between that peace and that inner fire. You know, that we need to burn brightly, but at the same time, we learn to take those deep breaths and cleanse ourselves. I really like the use of color within this, especially as he focuses on the color blue in the first stanza. And the second stanza, you know, I like how he says in this encouraging way, we're halfway to our destination, but the path is rarely straight. To the point it is, it meanders and it twists, giving time to soak up the golden light of the sun. And what I liked about that stanza is the fact that it reminds us that it's not about quickly jumping from point A to point B. It's not about getting to the end of the journey. It's about the journey itself. The whole idea of everything that can be discovered along the way. So just an excellent write and very well done. And do we have Jeremy back, or did he decide to leave us?
No, he says he's out there waiting.
Oh, okay. Hey, Gene, can you bring Jeremy on?
Yeah, I've been screaming for hours. How are you? Sorry about that, guys.
Hey, you almost made it.
Problem.
Got down to the last three words.
Yeah, no, I could hear. It dropped me for some reason, but now I can finally hear what you guys are saying too. So it's even better that it happened. So yeah, you know what? In this, do you guys know that Shel Silverstein, I'm searching for my missing piece, where it's a circle without a triangle, and he's going around looking for his missing piece. He finally finds it, and then he gets a triangle in his mouth, and he can roll, and he spits it out, and he keeps looking again. It's about the journey. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I'm looking for my missing piece. That's what it made me think of at the beginning. But I think what Aaron did in this poem, in looking at the author notes at the end, is the classifying the motive types and the color code. Each stanza represents the mood and what he does down there at the bottom, red by power, blue by intimacy, white by peace, and yellow by fun. And I think he took each stanza to take each one of those colors and embody those feelings. And it wasn't until I had a minute to read it and understand the author note that I saw that that's what he was doing in this. And I think it was a cool little breakdown and a play on all of it. And again, it is that full circle, right? It is that missing piece that finally completes everything. And then once it does, is that the answer, or is looking at each individual section, is the journey really the point, or is the completion of the task the point? It's how I looked at it all. But I think in a lot of ways it was a fun write, and I like how Aaron, once again, as everyone tonight, has made me think in some fun ways. Great conversation, guys.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. And I like when poetry makes us think in fun ways. So great comment there. And Rex, what do we got next?
Build the Wall by Thomas B. We shall never change what penetrates contrary to fate. Form focused, walls concise, we are ready, us or them, aliens, fear, commands, innocence, a disguise to fool our eyes. We are not to be treated like a joke. Always ready, aware, pull up a chair, end poem.
Great read there, Rex. And Jeremy, let's start with your thoughts.
This is tough right out of the gate because it's so concise, but it definitely, there were some things that had me thinking. I like innocence, a disguise to fool our eyes. We are not to be treated like a joke, because that is the biggest struggle, right? When you're innocent, when you show innocence, when you show the pure, let's just use the word pureness of anything, any situation, you look to be the victim, or you look like to be someone that can be taken advantage of. And it's a disguise to fool our eyes. I really like that one little part, because it's like, you know what, just because I'm innocent, just because I'm not going to be taking control of a situation, or just because I'm not going to be shown that I'm not as intelligent as everyone around me doesn't mean that I need to be looked at less than, or it doesn't mean that I need to be the victim of any kind of situation. Guys, in such short time, that's the biggest point I took from this. I think it's a really cool poem, and I like that Thomas is able to evoke such thought out of such a brevity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. And yeah, I like that you mentioned the idea of, you know, just because, you know, I may come across as not as deep or not as, hard formed from, you know, life's experiences, or that, you know, this is how I choose to be, you know, don't make me the brunt of your jokes. So, you know, excellent observation on how oftentimes we tend to treat people. So great comment. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Oh, wait, did you read that? Yes, I think. Or did you?
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, I'm sorry. Voices are blending together. So your thoughts.
Rats in a maze, nibbling or looking for that cheese. To pull up a chair and hit on that note of ever watchful. This deeper thought that runs into this, but it also hits on that thought of walls being built in and around the mind, the body. But the deeper angle, you can walk this into something else, that thought with a us or them, alien sphere commands, innocence that disguised to fool our eyes. We are not to be treated like a joke. It hits on that the angle of we being the plebe, so to speak, the underlings, those that get used for the cannon fodder, those that used for chads, just be clipped off and thrown into the wind and the void. The idea we're not important enough, never were, never will be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is a really good point. You know, and yeah, there are those who get used, by the system or trampled upon. So excellent comment. Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful thought-provoking brevity, and the whole idea of the walls we put up. I really like and the idea that oftentimes we're rigid and inflexible, we believe how things should be a certain way, and we don't want that to change. We shall never change. What penetrates contrary to fate, from focus walls concise, we are ready for them. You know, there's the whole idea of the way we just, there's always a line drawn, always an us or a them. You know, never, like, the very rarely the thought of, you know, being flexible. But I do like, Rex, how you brought up the idea of being trampled upon. I thought that was especially a thoughtful comment, and, you know, it was an excellent write by Thomas B., and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Formal do, and that one's for you.
Okie dokie. I will have you know that a giant moth is trying to break into my house. So if you suddenly hear me scream, it's because I'm being dragged off by Mothman.
Feed it to the hamster. Feed it to the hamster.
I think it's bigger than the hamster.
Give it to the cat.
But that is... I don't have cats. I'll feed it to the cat-sized dog. There you go. All right. Now, I am sorry. What poem am I reading?
Formal do.
Aha. Here we go. All right. Tucked into a tux with tails and black tie, an air of flair, debonair, not a hair. Out of place, he bends his head to her. Painted face, misses blood, red lips, kisses her ear. Poured into a sequin sheath, accenting her V, she poses erect and lean and scarlet, velvet heels that ground her partie, chemise. They stand like pines in the deco foyer,
sipping from crystal champagne flutes. A Jonquil-scented suede-gloved hand flutters to single, "They're here," end poem. And I thought that was really just a wonderful write in both presentation and lyrical quality. I really like how she took and she made the shape, the length and shape of the poem to kind of mirror the art, the chosen prompt itself. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
I love it. I freaking love it. I like what you just said, Pam. I think that the art, the example, the picture that we see in this poem, and how this is formatted, very, very, very vertical, makes the poem, because otherwise I don't think I would have been as interested, to be honest. I think the fact that it's so stacked works. It is a formal do. It's him in the first, it's her in the second, and then it's the tango in the third and fourth. And especially in the fourth, a Jonquil-scented suede-gloved hand flutters to signal, "They're here." I mean, it's the announcement. It's cool. It works. One of the funnest that I've enjoyed tonight, Barbara. I think what she did, I don't know. I'm smiling because I enjoyed it so much. I don't have much more to say.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, that's a great comment there. And, yeah, I definitely agree. It is the kind of write that makes you smile. Oh, and Rex, your thoughts?
It bites into 20s, 30s, Art Deco era, where everybody went out on, when those who went out on the, those who knew of what, who and what they were, went out on the town to a special place, a part where they go to be seen and be seen. And that idea with the last stanza, suede gloved hand flutters to signal they're here, offers that note of not just presence, but it hits on that thought to the not the doorman, but the one, the announcer, that butler who announces the pedigree of those coming in the door to the audience in attendance. So it kind of hits on an era that is long gone, but it also kind of paints that era as what it was, from the black tie and tails, the kiss on the ear. That's purposeful. Why? Because you don't want to spoil the lipstick, even though she's standing there drinking champagne. That is allowable in the moment. So there's a touch of haughtiness that walks within this too.
Sir Rex has entered the building, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, <right. laughs>
Oh my God! Great comment there, Rex. And you're right; it does touch on the whole idea of a bygone era, Yeah, and, I like that you brought up that idea that somebody who announces, and the idea, like, there's almost a sensuality to this, but it really does focus, as you said, Rex, on the idea of people who go out to be seen, to see and be seen, to be with the in crowd. You know, I thought this wonderful use of imagery, wonderful use of shaping, and I like the ending. A Jonquil-scented suede glove hand flutters to single their fear. It kind of makes me think of the whole the princess wave. Just an excellent write and very well done. And I'll be right back in just a couple minutes. You two go ahead and handle the show.
Okay. We've got Abstract Art by Scott Sharp, and that one's definitely for you, Jeremy.
Abstract Art by S. Sharp. You've crossed me in gray and white as the blood pools at the foot of thought. A square peg eyes me from the circle of life, floating somewhere beyond the norms of creation, darkness backdrops. Precaution. I fancy myself colorblind and feel better when whispering to myself about my fears. I frame it to hang it, to, but someone has torn down all the walls. End poem.
Great read, Jeremy. I like this. This is a nice touch of abstract thought that rolls within that thought for the abstract art. And that idea of you've crossed me, it isn't, I don't think it's talking about someone else. I think the idea is the mind itself, him. You've crossed me. In gray and white, as the blood pools at the foot of thought, the blood pool at the foot of thought is that draining way of expectation in the moment as to what the picture means, because now you have to change that thought, because the square peg eyes me from the circle of life, him being that square peg in the moment, floating somewhere between the norms of creation, darkness, backdrops, precaution. I fancy myself colorblind and feel better whispering to myself about my fears. Now that there's, he can talk to himself about his fears, but the idea of sharing those is an illusion that he cannot deal with in the moment, because considering himself that square peg in the round hole of life kind of puts himself outside the boundaries of what other people might think, and he's got a notion that he wouldn't be viewed in a very good meaning or a good way. And that thought, I frame it to look look to hang it, but someone has tore down all the walls. That in the moment was comes right back to the opening line. You've crossed me. He's torn down. In order to walk back into life, he's got to tear down those walls. And even though he might be that square peg, he has to now pound himself into the round hole of life, because even though he feels he doesn't fit, the only way to actually fit in is to actually try to fit in. And what about you?
I took it as a greater metaphor. I'm going crazy with this one. Sorry, Scott, but I'm going crazy with my interpretation. And from the opening, you crossed me. It's the jilted lover, Rex. She took him. He wanted something to be something much greater. He had views of how this would be, but it just didn't work out. The relationship was a square peg and a round hole in the circle of life. Then the darkness fell, the precaution. He didn't see it happening, and then all of a sudden, all the fears came, and he wanted to still hold this relationship high, and there weren't any walls to hang on. I had fun with it. I mean, maybe that's not what Scott meant at all, but it was a fun little metaphor in my mind. If I'm totally wrong once again, I apologize.
Oh, yeah, I can see that, because then the gray and white blood pools at the foot of thought is, oh, shit, what did I miss?
Exactly. So that's the fun of what we're doing tonight. That's the fun of poetry, that you can take something and make it work for your own thought. So it's abstract art. So you can take it literal in this one, but because of the brevity, I like to take brevities and take them on a ride for a bit, and that's what this did for me.
Pam, are you back yet?
I am back, but I'm heading downstairs because there's a hornet on crack in my room. So,
I guess he's got his buzz on.
Take a picture.
I would if it would hold still, but it won't. But anyways, I'm leaving my room for a little bit, and if it actually holds still, I'll take a picture and I'll say, hey, here's that hornet on crack. So
you and Rex, are you envisioning like the movie The Birds? Like Pam is running from like maybe a wasp or maybe a fly in her house, and she's just kind of covering her head with a jacket and running down the stairs.
Yeah, that fly with Vincent's face on it.
Or Jeff Goldblum, right?
Yes. And I think there was the earlier version than the one Jeff Goldblum did, if I remember right. Wasn't there, Rex, the fly from the 60s or something like that?
Yeah, with Vinny on it.
Yeah, that's a price.
Yes.
Yep.
But, yeah, no, I have to say that, you know, because I had read this one earlier, and obviously I'm looking at it now. I liked – I liked the wordplay in this. I thought it was clever. It was fun. And even with some dark imagery, as it mentions blood pools, you know, you've crossed me in gray and white as the blood pools at the foot of square peg eyes me from the circle of life. You know, I just like how it's that whole concept of trying to fit in and realizing that you're just not going to, or, you know, and I really like, I fancy myself colorblind. You know, I don't know, there's like, it's fun, as Jeremy said. It's fun, it's clever, and I like the whole concept of the walls being torn down. So, excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
A Dog's Pavane by Jack Blue. If space is not a sheer frontier between two sad realities of life and death, but just a gate to some little infinity of love or light, I must be there, flying on my typewriter, typing steins of heart or grace. I handle any hard mirage reverberating gloomily fragile galaxy like a merciless Picasso or the dissonant Favier. Far beyond the dead neighborhood of even mind's topology, a moon afloat diffusively on the edge of gravity puzzles me when I suppose she might be hovering around. Let my typewriter be brave, be fluttering away where no star but just a moon mirroring my memories takes me to tomorrow's truth or to the blue infinity. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. And I know you just read that, Rex, but I feel like the last three poems, Jeremy has gone first for commenting. So I am going to ask you to share your thoughts first.
Well, so up front, A Dog's Pavane. Pavane is a dance, a dog's dance. So the idea of him being the dog on the typewriter, trying to illuminate thoughts. And there is an angle, even though it might be running around the moon itself, a moon afloat diffusely on the edge of gravity puzzles me when I suppose she might be hovering around. So the idea, that could be a love interest, the reference there, but it might just be the moon itself as it walks within the thought of the moon as a background piece to that which he's writing. Let my typewriter be brave to be fluttering away when no star but just the moon mirroring my memories takes me to tomorrow's truth or to the blue infinity. But it's on life and death up top. It's a star between two sad realities of life and death, but just a gate to some little infinity of love or light. So the idea, there is an angle of love in this, but he's got his fingers flying on a typewriter, so that might be the thought of not being able to speak in the moment or tapping out a note that might be flying elsewhere, another state, another country, whatever, typing signs of heart of grace. The fragile galaxy, that's himself, his life, like a merciless Picasso of the dissonant body. I like that thought of the merciless Picasso because that's a a heavy beat piece itself, and run on a clavier, that could be quite the musical interlude, and the neighborhood of mind's topology, the idea, it might be just the idea of something clicking in the mind in the moment where everything works, so we can actually voice that which is in him, whether it be love or light, whether it be the thought of the moon itself drifting in that blue infinity.
I like that. I like those thoughts. And I like how you touch on the idea that there could be different things that the moon represents, that it could represent an actual person or rather just a setting put in place. And I did have to look up the word pavane earlier. And yes, as a group dance that oftentimes had a slow rhythm, a slow beat to it. It can also be used to describe the music, the style of music that a pavane was often danced to. And I thought it was intriguing that, and I liked learning something new
a new word. But I really think you had some great observations about, you know, the possibility of, you know, like the idea of someone being, you know, that observing, like just, so really great comment there, Rex. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yes, there is a real committee out there, Rex, composed of two members, Pam and myself. It is the Rex Fact Check Committee, and I, too, had to look up Pavane. And you're right. You were awarded 1 point for correctness, Rex. So we're not playing any favorites, but just know that we're on to your case. No, I'm with you. No, wonderful comments, both of you. Wonderful comments, both of you guys. And I know that Jack is a new member to our group here, so I want to say welcome, Jack. Hopefully you
he's been dropping religiously, too.
Yeah, I know. I hope he calls in one of these nights. I'd love to do more because there are times, guys, when we read these poems and automatically I hit the follow button, I'm introduced to a new poem, and that just happened just now with Jack's poems. I know we've read some earlier stuff of his that I was intrigued by, but this poem did it for me. I really loved it. I love that title, especially since it made me have to educate myself a little bit. But, no, it was so cool. But I really got lost in the first, and I just let myself kind of hang there because that is such a cool thought in that first stanza that I didn't want to go much further. And sometimes I think it's fair in poetry. I think it's fair to just take a little piece and let yourself do that. So if there is a space, is not a sheer frontier between two sad realities of life and death, but just a gate to some little, and I love that, some little infinity, because I love the way that sounds, of love or light, I must be there. Because hell effing yeah, that's where you want to be, right? Guys, that's exactly where you want to be. And the fact then that he follows up with flying in my typewriter, I don't know. It gives me the chills. I love that stanza. I wish I would have written it because it's such a cool thought. So enough fawning over you, Jack Blue. Call in one day and let's meet you, brother man.
Well, I will say, though, it's not completely impossible. Since Jack lives in Japan, the chances of him calling in probably aren't likely, though we do have people who can call in long distance, so maybe that he might just do that.
You know what else is in Japan, don't you, Pam? Mothra.
Godzilla?
Big flying moths that suck veins are flying around in Japan, so look out.
Well, I'm sure if they're there, then Jack will be writing a poem about them. So, you know.
And he's probably working, too, because it is right now in Tokyo, 3:13 p.m.
Yeah, that would make sense. But, yeah, I highly recommend checking out Jack's poetry. He's fun to comment on because when his responses to your comments are like little mini poems in themselves. So, but I really like what you both had to say. I do like, Rex, that you brought up the music references in the second stanza.
Well, Toccata is an intense song or a musical piece, not a song. It goes from levels of intensity down to swoops and up again to highs. So it is a very intense piece to listen to.
Well, yeah, it's like the group that does the After Midnight intro song. Don't they do a toccata?
Emerson, Lake of Palmer, yes. Keith Emerson wrote that, and he actually hunted the guy down who wrote the song, and he took a tape with him to, I think it was Switzerland at the time, and he played it for him because he wanted his, not just his position, permission, but he wanted him to understand his interpretation of his music.
Absolutely. So have you ever seen that? Heard that song, Jeremy, Emerson, Lake and Palmer's Toccata?
I don't. Are you trying to trick me right now? You want me to sing to you, Pam? Is that what you're trying to get me to do?
Oh, there's no words in it. It's just pure music.
There's no lyrics in this. But, I guess next time I want you to sing, I should probably choose a song with lyrics.
No, I was just curious because I was going to say.
I'm still not falling for it, Pam. I'm still not falling for it.
No, I was just going to say to you, you know, you should listen to it if you haven't. But, yeah, I really like what you both have said. I really like, Jeremy, that you were focused in on that one stanza because sometimes you just can get swept up in a particular part of a poem. You know, and to me, the big picture I got out of this was the idea of seeing the big picture, of thinking beyond yourself, of not just being trapped in your own little world, but looking it out at that blue infinity, that distant moon. And I like the references to music. And I loved how you said flying on my typewriter, as if in that moment there's that realization of your calling to express yourself in poetry and words, and, you know. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Well, speaking of that, Jack's on the board right now.
That's right. We might get him to call in. I'm sitting here messaging him. So great poem, Jack. We love your work, buddy.
Yes, we do. We are a big fan of Jack. That's for sure. We are gonna start a club and call ourselves the Jack Attacks. Does that work as a club name?
Attack is a subset of the Rex Fact Check Club. So there's like a subsidiary. I mean, there's got to be an origin.
Well, there is a football team called the Yellow Jackets.
Yellow Jackets. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is. Huh. All right. Well, let's try to get another poem read and commented on. So what do you got for us next, Rex?
Only the Good Die Young by Colab. And we got SoundCloud.
All right.
Gene, can you press play, please?
Only the Good Die Young by Colab. Oh, how your eyes scintillate when you say all things wicked start from innocence. For such statements could only be made by a septic with a jaded view on the concept itself. For innocence knows not that it is one, nor even grasp the notion of wickedness. It spreads like white snow on all that it touches. It understands no bounds. It turns a grimy, cold, dust-laden landscape into a pristine one with the sparkles of snowflakes. In its simplicity, it is intricate and incomprehensible to the knowing mind, for the innocent is ingenue, guileless without a clue. He will do something straight from his heart, uncalculated from the start, which can even lead him to his demise. He is not wired like a common mortal, but Christ-like. He's Dostoevsky's The Idiot Prince Mishkin, who's painstakingly kind to the point of irritation. He's the Don Quixote chasing after windmills. He seems to exist for the sheer foolish spectacle to prove that you are superior. Or could it be that they exist to remind us how far we've fallen from grace and confirms the adage of only the good die young? End of poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Colab. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Oh, the idea fits nicely into that last stanza with a sheer full spec. Oh, he seems to exist for the sheer foolish fruit that you are superior. Or could it be they exist to remind us how far we've fallen from grace and confirms the adage of only the good die young? Yes, there is you've got to hit on that notation of the quote itself. All truly wicked things start from innocence. And that does bite at the premise of innocence to begin with. Because if really wicked things came out of innocence, then what would be the point of innocence to begin with? I think it's a twisted thought in and on itself because it hits on the back angle of those who are wicked run that angle. Oh, so yeah, it's just a bit of an innocent thought. Yes, it turns out wickedly. No. If it comes out that you're running wicked to begin with, there is no basis in innocence because nobody walks on that, because she hits on the thought of that childlike notion of not lying, but where they're so honest that they, hey, why are you so fat in that dress? It don't look good on you. Well, Grandpa, you pick your nose too much. Stop eating those boogers too. I used to do that, but not anymore. The idea of being that honest up front kind of shames that prompt itself. Anyway, and the idea of innocence, it spreads white like snow on all that it touches. It understands no bounds. It turns grimy, cold, dust-laden landscape into pristine one with sparkles of snowflakes. There, yes, the idea of you look at a barren wasteland in winter, and it's covered in snow. At that point in time, it's pristine landscape because there's purity in the whiteness, which is what the simplicity that comes with innocence is, purity in the moment. So the back end of this holds all of that. It is that angle to which we've walked so far outside the moral landscape that they are looked down upon for their innocence because they still exude that amount of gentleness within their soul that we cannot connect to.
I like that thought. And yeah, that walking so far out of the moral landscape and the idea of how, you know, innocence can almost become twisted, you know, and shaped and molded to be something that it was never meant to be, thoughts shared. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
Was anyone else singing some Billy Joel during this one?
Only the good die young.
There it is, buddy. There it is. No, that's where it set me off. No, I love this poem. And
come out, Virginia.
There it is. Follow A-N-A-K-E Colap, because she does the same thing. Her name is Emma, and she does the exact same thing that you do, Colap, in this, in which there is that connection. And I love the fact there was a SoundCloud, by the way, the connection between two stanzas without a break. And I love that stylistic way of continuing a poem, doing the visual break, and then, but it's meant to be read as a continuous flowing poem. So I'm glad, again, there was a SoundCloud. And then since I was so stylistically hooked on this one, the 1, 2, 3, the fourth, I love the fact that there was so many sharp, I don't know how else to describe it, so many sharp letters. And I'll say K's, T's, X's, Y's, and it runs so smoothly. So I'm sorry to get so technical, but I was impressed by those aspects of this poem and the fact that someone can make something so artistically, visually aggregate, make so smooth. So that was what I took away. I kind of got lost in the details, guys. Sorry for the weeds.
No, I get it. And, you know, the technical parts of poetry are just as important as, you know, the emotional parts. It all makes the whole package. And I do the same thing. I comment on those kind of things. And I think Colap would be very happy to hear that comment, actually, because there was one poem of hers that I made that a similar comment, a written one, where I said that, you know, I like that shaping, that form. She said, thank you. I've been, you know, basically I've been trying this out and I think I'm really finding myself, you know, like within this formatting, you know, I'm really finding a style that is, you know, myself, that to the way I want to express myself. I'm slightly paraphrasing, but, you know, that's basically the gist of what she said. So I think when she hears that comment, she's really going to appreciate that.
Thanks for saying that. I mean, because there are some of us turkeys out here that actually pay attention to that kind of crap. So when I see it, I have an appreciation for it. So I know it's that much more difficult, and it's part of the whole artistic game we're playing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's go ahead and try to, like, maybe fit in one more, Rex. What do you think?
Yeah, I got a shorty. By the Repercussionist, City by the Bay, and we've got a SoundCloud for that too.
True. drove across the country along Route 66. Got my kicks but had more fun on Route 101. Then to the Windy City, the Motor City's okay. Seen the Big Apple but have to say, forget the rest, the one I love best is the city by the bay. Rode Hawaiian waves at sunset. Banzai Pipeline even wore a lei. But missed Alcatraz and the razzmatazz of the city by the bay. Took cable cars to Chinatown. Surfed Golden Gate, North Point along the way. Went winding down Lombard Street in the city by the bay. They have wine that's fine, they say, and you may take it to the bank. Lock it in the vault. Fog's better than smog any day, and San Andreas is its only fault. In the city by the bay.
Wonderful read and write there, Repercussionist. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. That is just a wonderful write. That performance made me smile. And I love the appreciation and the celebration of the city of San Francisco. Sorry about that. You know, it just really catchy. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Totally agree, Pam. I was sitting here with a fist punching the ceiling because I was grooving to this thing. What a wonderfully fun performance of a poem. And Alcatraz and Razzmatazz. I love San Francisco. I think it's one of the coolest cities in the country. And this got into kind of that, it was kind of a groove. And I was feeling it. So 100% enjoyed Razzmatazz. I'm along with you, Pam. I was smiling all the way through.
Absolutely. Great comment. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it did have, it hit on that note of beat poetry, something that you could, he could have done that with bongos in the background and maybe a little bit of a bass guitar and would have gotten the same reaction. But he added some nice touches, like the took cable cars to Chinatown, got a little bit of Chinese music right in the background. And the sort of the inline rhyme and the offset rhyme that he runs through this works very well. It hits on that note of running a beat thought. And I like the thought, but missed Alcatraz and the razzmatazz of the city by the bay, which is what the whole thing was about, walking the pleasantry of San Francisco Bay. But he even managed to hit on the angle of wine that's fine. You may take it to the bank, lock it in the vault. But then again, drop in the last, and San Andreas is its only fault in the city by the bay. San Andreas being that little abstract notion, if that thing goes off, well, there might not be nothing left in the city by the bay.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did. That is a really good point there. And I did like the use of the phrase razzmatazz. So cool comment. Well, I have to say this has been a wonderful show. Thank you, Rex. Great show tonight. Thank you, Jeremy, for calling in. Thank you to Phil for everything that you do. Thank you to everyone who wrote to the show, for the show, is listening now or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. Make sure, of course, if you get a chance to check out the topic boards and contests put up by our late night poet hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And of course, that includes Rex's contest for his Sunday show. And all right, and have a good night, everyone.
Good night, gang.